Formed over 150 years ago, Harlequins are one of the most famous names in club rugby. But from the introduction of the National League system in 1987, Quins were never able to win English rugby's top prize. That finally changed in 2012. In the latest episode of our Rugby Stories podcast series, we follow the season when Conor O'Shea led the Aristocrats of the Premiership to league glory.
That team was forged and it was so organic and it came through the academy. We didn't just play like Harlequins, we were Harlequins.
That is a beauty!
Live by the sword, die by the sword.
We were doing things that other teams couldn't really handle.
We were all united behind a singular goal, and that was winning.
The moment of real promise this for the Quins!
And that's the exact start we want.
You don't get the opportunity to win things very often, so when you do, go for it.
And when it pops up with TRY, just a little wink to the lads.
Harlequins are English champions for the first time in their history.
In Rugby Stories, you'll get the full, extended, uncut anecdotes from the players, coaches and key figures, some of them never told before. Hugo Monye spent the whole of his professional career at Harlequins. The powerhouse back played 240 times for Quins, 14 times for England, and was the highest try scorer on the Lions' 2009 tour of South Africa. When Monye came to the Twickenham Stoop in 2002, he walked into a club full of internationals, but short on trophies.
So I'd played schoolboy level, and then a coach, a guy called Colin Osborne, brilliant bloke, he invited me to play for the under-21s, and I was really nervous because I'd been protected up until that point by age grade rugby, playing against 16-year-olds when I was 16 and vice versa and everything else. So for me, it felt like quite a big deal, and I felt like a little bit of an audition. So the night before, I like got all my gear ready, jumped on the train in the morning, went up to the stoop and walked into his change room, and seeing boys with beards was slightly frightening. So to walk into a change room with some legends of the game, Keith Wood, he was named World Player of the Year that year, was in that change room. Will Greenwood, Dan Luger, Tony Diprose, Jason Leonard, and the list goes on. And you start to realise that you've got a lot of work to do to establish yourself, get some level of respect, and actually understand what professional sport's all about. You look around at the size of some of these guys and you're thinking, wow, this is a big opportunity. So I was unpacking my bag, trying to get ready for the game, and I'd forgotten my boots. Kind of need your boots. I remember walking over to the kit man, a guy called Ratty because of his personality. And you can imagine me, this little kid, said, got this game, but I forgot my boots. So my first ever game for Harlequins, I played in a size 10 left Reebok boot and a size 11 right Nike boot, because that's all they had. So it wasn't the introduction I wanted, but I guess you've got to start somewhere, right? It's quite rare in sport to have such a well-established club, such a well-known name, such an established shirt, but very little success attached to it. Sold-out crowds, you know, you walk around London, you see the shirt, you recognise it, you look at the players that have come to play for the team, but very little success. And that was what I was desperate to do for the club. I wanted to do it for myself, of course, but it felt appropriate that a club with so much prestige and history needed to have a major trophy to its name. And they'd won trophies previously, and I think the perception of Harlequins that we were a bit of a champagne-swigging club. You look at some of the previous captains and they almost fit the stereotype of the perception of everyone else. But it was important that alongside what everyone perceived us to be, the history of the club, that we had some tangible evidence. We needed a trophy cabinet that was full.
Another one club man, wing Tom Williams, came to Quins at one of the most turbulent times in its modern history. Williams' debut season in 2004-2005 ended with Harlequin's shock relegation on the final day of the Premiership.
Time. My goodness, Quins are relegated. They have gone out of the Zurich Premiership. It was not meant to be this way for Mark Evans and his club this season.
During that season, I remember featuring occasionally, but most prescient in my mind is that last game where we were playing at the Stoop against Sale Sharks. The main stand at the Stoop was currently being built, and that was a metaphor for how we were as a club. We were in that process of rebuilding or building something. This was the indication, the start of something, yet we weren't quite there yet. We were trying to run before we could walk, and we lost sight of what it was that really makes teams successful. We tried to go away from the way that we played, or our identity as a club, where we've got a jester on our shirt and we play fast and loose and we offload and we challenge teams in different kinds of ways, and we try to suddenly become this team that we weren't.
The dawning realisation, it's relegation.
We were too happy to go along with what was okay, mediocrity. And that's one of the things that changed when Dean Richards arrived.
Quins were at their lowest point in decades. They needed a dramatic new direction. So they brought in one of the most successful coaches in English club rugby. Dean Richards had won 4 back-to-back Premiership titles in charge of Leicester Tigers and 2 European Cups. As director of rugby, he was tasked with rebuilding Harlequins from their lowest ebb. Ugo Monya remembers being at a crossroads in his career and a pivotal conversation with Richards.
I felt my career was going in the opposite direction to where the club was. So I had a bit of an internal battle. Selfishly, I felt I needed to play in the Premiership to play for England. And the club that I loved wasn't in the Premiership. And so you're trying to weigh out what's best for you, but also what's best for the club. Dean and Mike Evans sat down with me and shared with me their vision and said, no one's leaving. We're in this together. We're going to go down and we'll be back in 12 months. And 12 months doesn't feel like a long time, but in professional sport it is. I played for 14 years. I think the average career length in the Premiership is 7. So I thought I didn't want to waste any time. I wanted to keep that momentum of going away the Churchill Cup. I'm now visible to this England coach. There's going to be a transition from the England team that won the World Cup in 2003 to building 2 years away from the World Cup in 07. I wanted to be part of that conversation. But we all stayed. And once again, and I think it's probably a common theme for every setback the club had, we found a way to bounce back.
That year was all about laying the foundations. Yes, we won the league. Yes, we won the cup, which was the one below the Premiership. But actually, the biggest victories we had in that year was gaining a team spirit where we were all united behind a singular goal, and that was winning.
We signed Andrew Mertens, the All Black. So that was exciting. We had a World Cup winner in Will Greenwood at outside centre. So we knew we had good people, but for the club to be successful and to sustain some element of success, we also needed to find the next generation of Harlequins. And in 2005, playing the Championship, it gave us an ability to be able to do that. Would we have been as brave, as bold to blood some of these youngsters in the Premiership? Perhaps not. I guess we'll never know, but we did. When I look at 05, I do see it as the birthplace for a lot of the guys that went on to be Harlequins legends.
Those men who'd become Harlequins legends all had a season to grow and develop in the second tier under Dean Richards' leadership. Tom Williams, Nick Easter, Mike Brown, Chris Robshaw all played a part as Quinn stormed the league, winning 25 out of 26 games. An immediate return back to the Premiership also saw the arrival of Quinn's all-time top try scorer and one of the most mercurial players in England, scrum half Danny Kerr.
Harlequins had just come back up in 2006. And Adam Fortune had been relegated with Leeds and had the opportunity to come down to London. I met with Dean Richards, Andy Friend and Mark Evans, I think it was at the time. And they sold me the club in 5 minutes. I think they said, we want you to come down here and have fun, play a brand of rugby, which you're going to enjoy. You can tap and go, you can run from anywhere, you can do whatever you want. We're going to build a team around you. And I was like, wow, I'm this little kid from Leeds, 19 years old, and Dean Richards is talking about trying to build a team around me. So I was sold there and then, really. They seemed to care about me. They'd done the research. They'd watched a lot of my games. Apparently, Dean was a fan for a while. And if Dean Richards is a fan, you know, hopefully you're doing something right.
Dino was also a fan of Nick Evans. The All Black fly half was seen as a huge coup for Quins when he effectively ended his international career to sign for them in 2008. Evans brought his international experience to a young side that needed a really experienced architect at the back. He would go on to become Harlequin's top point scorer in their history.
So when I came, they'd already had a year out of the Championship into the Prem, and you could see the growth that had already been made in the combinations, you know. And that was important, you know, young back row playing together, young centres, young backs playing together, young wingers playing together. Those combinations were crucial. And when I got there, they had already been pretty much cemented. And my job was just to organise it.
Quins were now full of established and growing talent, but the events and, of course, repercussions of the Bloodgate scandal in 2009 saw Dean Richards resign and get banned from rugby for 3 seasons. Tom Williams got a 4-month ban for his part in the incident. A period of huge upheaval saw a new director of rugby come in, Conor O'Shea. Joining midway through the 2009-2010 season, O'Shea had to win over his new squad and steer Quins back in the right direction.
I was very fortunate to go into a very, very talented squad, and I knew they were talented and with great owners. So, you know, it's easy to try and big it up and say all the things that you did. I was very fortunate to go into a great club and be entrusted with moving them on.
Conor obviously came in to the club when we were in a little bit of turmoil, and we needed someone like Conor to steady the ship and set us back on course. And it was a tough ask for him. It was a tough job. But he took to it so well.
He brought with him a style of play that was more in suiting to the players we had at Harlequins. We weren't trying to be something we weren't.
We wanted to play this brand of style that was high tempo but high risk, and it probably went against what was happening in the Premiership at the time.
Conor, for me, was almost like a second dad, like a second father figure. Obviously, I was a long way from home. I am a family man. I miss my mum and dad a lot when I moved down to London. And Conor would be there for you wherever you wanted him, whenever you needed him. Middle of the night phone calls. He probably got a couple from a couple of police stations with me. He would tell you when you're in the wrong, and that was me quite a lot, but he would never blame you. He would always help. That would be his big thing. He'd help you. And any game we play, we could be awful. And he would say, "That's my fault. I didn't prepare you well enough. I'll take it on the chin."
One of O'Shea's first recruits, hooker Joe Gray, credits the Irishman with restoring Quinn's historic attacking ambition.
Conor came in and brought me in with him in 2010 and actually educated the whole squad on what Harlequins was as a club, what they'd done in their history, the style of play they used to play back in the day when they were founded, and actually gave us a real license to express ourselves and play what we see, and we will live and die by the sword. So give it a go. Don't die wondering. And it really allowed us to go after every game and express ourselves.
We were doing okay. I think we qualified for Europe and we'd had some success.
In his first full season in charge, Conor O'Shea led Harlequins to the LV Cup semi-final, qualification for the Heineken Cup, and the final of the European Challenge Cup against Stade Francais.
This is one of those fixtures that you know will deliver. Anglo-French, Amlin finals have a history of high scoring, a history of tight finishes.
They had a massive pack with internationals everywhere, and it was a really tough, hard-fought game.
I think we played well building up to that game, and then for whatever reason, that final, things just didn't really click. I think we were a bit nervous for a lot of us. It was our first proper final, and we were a young group of lads that only knew one way. We only knew to throw the ball around. We didn't know how to win cup finals. We didn't know how to close them out. We had to learn that. And luckily for us, we just stayed in the fight. We stayed in the fight against a very good Stad team.
We got a try right towards the end where we made the break. Danny Kerr grubbed us to the corner.
Evans quickly to Marler. Barnstorming run. Kerr's there. Little chip. Where's this going? Oh, Camacho! And a conversion to come to win the cup.
There was no nerves.
Nick doing what Nick does, just doesn't feel the pressure, just ice cold.
Nick Evans, one of the biggest kicks of his life, into the lights and through the posts. Time running out, Quins ahead.
Nick Evans, with nerves of steel, to seal a 19-18 win and their first trophy under Conor O'Shea. Joe Gray says the Challenge Cup sparks the hunger in the team for more and bigger trophies.
As a group, it was a realisation of what we could accomplish. Like, we didn't just win the Challenge Cup against the lower sides. We'd actually beaten some of the best sides in Europe in the build-in to that 2011 Champions Cup win. And then that gave us loads of confidence moving into the 2011-2012 Premiership season.
That try through Danny Kerr's little grubber kick through against Stade Francais, against the run of play right at the end, gives a team a different belief. Where does that fit in the mental psyche of a team?
For me, what we needed was him. Not because of his tactical mind, but we needed someone to come in and take a grip of a young group of men who were talented but needed that sense of liberty and freedom. And he delivered that. What I now appreciate is he saw a talented group of people that just perhaps just needed a lot of love. And he's one of the most spiritually given people that I've ever come across in rugby. And he allowed us to be ourselves. And who were we? We were young, we were silly, slightly naive. We were very much London. And we loved that part of ourselves. But we needed someone to embrace it, and he did. He was just tremendous. He allowed us just to go out and be the very thing that I think we're perhaps designed to be. And he certainly brought the very best in ourselves. And there's a lot of good coaches within rugby, but I think the greatest quality a coach can have is allowing a team to be itself. And he did that for us.
So to the 2011-2012 season. It would start under the shadow of the World Cup in New Zealand. Despite his club form, Ugo Monya had been left out of England's warm-up matches in August and didn't make the squad for the tournament. He wasn't the only member of the Harlequin side to miss out, and they used their disappointment to send a message.
Low on the loop, so much pace, so much promise, especially now Monya's involved and the arms up in celebration before he's crossed the line. Left out of the England squad, point made.
I'm a firm believer in the attitude you take to train onto the pitch. You know, there's only one person it affects. Well, there's two parties it affects. It affects you and it can affect the team. And you've got to leave your disappointment at the door. If you sulk and have a bad mood, bad attitude, it's not going to benefit anyone. So as much as I was disappointed, as well as it was for Danny Kerr, he got injured in the last World Cup warm-up match before the guys went to New Zealand. His parents had bought plane tickets and World Cup tickets to go and watch their boy play in New Zealand. So there was a few of us slightly dejected.
I think there was a few of us at Quinns that either not selected or injured, didn't go to that World Cup. Mike Brown, Chris Robshaw, all went, right, let's show them. Let's show these England coaches why we should have been there. Let's show why we're the best team. And then that year, I think we started with a bang.
Quinns began by winning 14 straight games in all competitions, including 10 in the league.
Hoppers there. Brown controls, scores.
All the way through the year, little things happening in that 2011-12 season, which to the uneducated, to the they look at the glam, they see the great performance of the final, they see the first 10 games unbeaten in the league. People saying, well, it was only because they, the World Cup was on.
Played 14, won 14 from September and now into December. Nobody can touch them. Quinns still winning.
We went through a period of time where you had the beliefs from big wins. When the wave is good, ride it for as long as you can.
Quinns' 14-game winning run was ended on the 9th of December in the European Champions Cup pool stage at home to French giants Toulouse. Just 9 days later, Quinns would travel out to the south of France for the away fixture against the then four-time European and 18-time French champions. Tom Williams remembered as one of the biggest tests and the turning point for his season.
One significant game that was probably the catalyst from a personal perspective for our season, and it also had a huge impact in our belief. And that was going away to Toulouse in the Heineken Cup. And Toulouse, European powerhouses, of course, they were back then, they still are today.
I don't think they had lost in 30-odd games at home in the Heineken Cup.
Hoisted high, questioning, bouncing.
We scored an unbelievable try.
Hopper, oh, that's lovely, back inside to Evans, and this is Robshaw.
Managed to get on the end of it for a try.
Danny Kerr, Drew Gray, that is a beauty.
It's my best try ever, it's like in the archives anyway.
Now a gone, this to stretch the lead to four. Jean-Marc Doucet, and it's 19-15.
Despite their impressive first half showing, Quinns were losing to the French champions with an hour gone. Off the bench came Tom Williams.
I was still that bit part player, trying to find my form. We were looking like it was unlikely we were going to win, so Connor threw me in for an opportunity.
Quinns change, Tom Williams on for Seb Stegman.
he flew like lightning up and he's under the post.
Tommy's impact there off that kick chase was incredible. Within our squad, you know, we always knew he was one of the best players. I remember when I first came down, I saw some clips of him back in his Wellington College school days, just taking the mick out of people. And he did that in training day in, day out. And then every game, Tommy would play well. He'd pitch up and he'd score big tries for us. He'd have big moments, he had a big moment in that Toulouse game.
Williams won the restart by clattering Toulouse player Vincent Clerc, and he fed the ball wide.
Quick ball, Kerr, Evans, everyone lining up to the left. One of them is Nick Easter. Big and strong. Oh, it's beautiful. And it's Mike Brown. Oh, yes.
And we're right back in the game.
Try that deserves to be converted, and Nick Evans does it.
It just built on that belief that we had been building that year.
Time's up. Easter, Monier, job done.
We were showing the best version of what Harlequins can offer. We were playing hard, on-the-edge rugby, but with the flair that you'd expect from a team like ourselves.
And yeah, going to places like Toulouse and winning that year gives you the belief, well, if we can do that, we can go anywhere and win.
Harlequins won 31-24 in France, and everything then seemed possible. But the new year brought a big dip in form for Quins, first in the league with a 24-3 defeat at Northampton.
Lamb juggles, does well, creates questions in the defence still, and Foden will make the most of it. But Northampton put the match to bed, and the try will be scored by Wilson. Oh, that's a real signal for Harlequins.
And then in Europe, where Tom Williams saw Quins' European hopes ended on a stormy night in Ireland.
The season 2011-2012 was unlike any other to start with. Harlequins had never gone that many games unbeaten to begin with, but soon after the World Cup, when the players started returning from 2011, things started to slowly unravel a little bit for Harlequins.
And Connacht, 9-5 up at the sports ground.
We go to Connacht, you know, if we win that game, we get out of our pool, we lose 9-8 and terrible game in Galway.
It was horrific conditions. The wind was blowing as it does. We just couldn't get into the game. We were getting suffocated. We probably didn't have the composure, which probably I'd take a bit of ownership of.
Wet and muddy and messy and all over.
It wasn't a team talk. It was a telling off. Connor doesn't really tell people off, but he did. He did that day.
Hugo Monier and Harlequins were out of Europe, and now there was only one top prize left for a Conor O'Shea's side.
Our focus then just went, it's the league. So arguably one of the lowlights in our year, and you know my career, was the reason we were able to go on, because we didn't have the depth to be able to go in two places.
A few bumps in the road, and we needed those bumps. We had to understand what it takes to win a title without having ever been there before, which was something that was a challenge, but a great challenge. And Connor was a constant throughout it, because I think he saw how we were developing, how we were growing, but also trying to not let us get ahead of ourselves. We were an excitable bunch. And so, yeah, we needed to be reined in at times, and Connor was good at doing that, and sometimes the results did that for us.
When you have tough times, how do you battle through them? People roll us off.
We started getting into old habits where we were winning some, losing some. The weather would come in, it got heavy, it was raining and cold, and the old Harlequins started to rear its ugly head. And I'm talking about the old Harlequins who have a cup run team, not the old Harlequins under Dean Richards.
I think when you get towards the business end of a season, like we were doing, we were top for so long, it's hard to not almost worry about slipping up. And I think we started probably worrying a little bit, maybe took our eye off the ball, maybe started playing a bit more cautiously, a bit more defensively. We weren't our usual self. I think we were kind of getting a bit nervous that this is going so well. Whereas we should have just kept true to what we thought was the right and kept playing that way, but we didn't. And we started slipping up. I think we lost. We weren't consistent enough. We weren't winning games on the bounce. We'd win one, lose one, win one, lose one.
You look at the pyrotechnics and you look at some of the great games, and there were fabulous moments during that year. But you also look at the things that allow you to reflect.
Despite their erratic form, Quins were still top of the league going into the penultimate game of the regular season, at home to second place Leicester Tigers.
history wasn't kind to us when it came to playing against Leicester Tigers. Our record of results against them were atrocious. The game at the Stoop was so challenging, so physical, everything we expected it to be.
Harlequins scrummaging hard.
Toby Flood was playing brilliantly well, was kicking his goals.
Toby, off the tee again. Oh, it's given away! And Monier with Allen on the chase, but Allen has given up. Nobody stops Hugo Monier, and he drives home that point.
The scores were level at 33-all when a decisive moment saw Quinns lose Hugo Monier.
We're getting heat up front, as you'd imagine, with some of their players. Took us on physically. I got injured. I was competing for a ball, and Martin Castro Giovanni cleared me out from a ruck.
Monier's down and hurting.
And I almost popped my hamstring off the bone. Automatically, I knew it was bad. And yeah, when you need assistance to walk off the pitch is never a great sign. And I just remember just being laid down on the physio bed. And yeah, I was in tears at the time because I thought we'd get another opportunity, or at least I hoped we'd get another opportunity to play him. And if we did, it would be in a final. And, you know, your mind plays tricks on you, and you fast forward to what a final might look like and whether you might be a part of it. So I had all those thoughts and fears.
Ben Youngs flings it away. Toby Flood, Thomas Waldron. Leicester have been very, very good today. They've come to the Premiership leaders and leave having made quite a statement. How about that?
With Monier off injured, his playoff chances in doubt, Quinns had nothing left to give. They lost 43-33, and Leicester had all the momentum heading to the playoffs. But Danny Kerr and Tom Williams felt the match showed a way for Quinns to break out of their inconsistent form.
Even though we'd lost that game, we scored a lot of points. And by scoring a lot of points, it was that reminder that we have to play in a certain style if we want to win the game. Defence alone wasn't going to win us the competition. We tried to go defensive after those 10 games and we'd come a cropper. So we had to refine our attack. We had to reinvest in the time we were spending crafting those elements.
We came off the pitch and we all sat in the change rooms and we went, OK, we know how to beat them now. We know if we got them again, we know how to beat them. In a funny way, it's the best thing that happened to us to lose that game, because it made us realise what it would take to beat the best. And they, apart from us, they were the best team. So we knew that if we got them in a final, that we would know how to beat them and we'd be better for the loss. So we took a lot of learnings from that. We learned that to beat the best, you have to have a full 80-minute performance. You can't slip against Leicester, because they know how to win big games, they know how to win titles. Connor was great after that game. He said, I'm so happy, I'm so proud of you. And we were like, we've just lost. He said, I don't care. We know how to beat them now, and you guys will be better for it.
A final day win against Sale sealed first place in the table for Harlequins, and a home draw in the playoff semi-final. But they'd be up against Northampton, who'd humbled them earlier in the year, and they'd be without Hugo Monier.
Yeah, to sit there in the stands and be helpless, useless really. There's nothing I could do to impact what's happened on the pitch.
The Premiership semi-final, Harlequins and Northampton. One step away from Twickenham, two steps away from being English champions for the first time.
We were rubbish. If you look back at that game, Northampton executed their game plan really, really well. They disrupted the way we wanted to play. We were scared to try things. We had a fear of failure, which we hadn't previously had, because we were suddenly in knockout rugby.
George Peasey off the floor to Downey, looking for support. He has it with Lee Dixon.
Dixon's try made it 23-15 to Northampton with 10 minutes to go. Conor O'Shea recalls how close Harlequins were to ending the season with nothing.
We were down, we were out in a lot of ways in that game, and Ryan Lamb tried to run a ball from inside his 22. If Ryan Lamb had kicked the ball the length of the pitch, we'd arguably be out. He didn't, and it changed the momentum to give us a chance.
Ball's out, play on.
Into the final 10 minutes, Saints ahead, but they have to keep playing. Oh, it's a penalty to Quinns, and maybe a step back into this.
Nick Evans kicked 3 points.
They're within punching distance.
Then, with minutes on the clock and Quinns 5 points down, Evans kicked for touch and the Quinns pack went for broke. In amongst it was Joe Gray.
We're kicking to the corner. There's 4 minutes on the clock. We're going to the line out. I remember waiting for the call. We jog over and they're like, if it's on, we're going to the back. Nick Easter will give you a nod and we're nailing it and mauling them.
The season ends for one of these two in the next 5 minutes. Quinns line out, won by Easter. Smuggled back to Joe Marler.
Nick Easter being Nick Easter just nodded. If it's on or if it's not, I know he just nods because he wants the ball. So threw the ball in at the line out, thought I'd overthrown it. He managed to gather it on the fingertips. And then we set up that maul. And as soon as I felt the maul start creaking and going, I knew we were going over the line. There's no stopping us.
And they're driving. All hands to the pump now.
And we land over the line. And I remember everyone screaming and losing it. And we look down and I can see Marler's over the try line and he's laying on the ball.
Watch my entry into that. I actually come in from the left-hand side and my sole responsibility and my thought process was to try and push it as close as I can to the post because I knew I didn't want a kick to win the game around 15, 20 metres out. It'd be one of those horrific positions that you have to try and kick from.
Nearly there! Nearly there!
I remember I ended up next to Joe with my eyes closed, hoping that no one would stand on my hands or anything like that.
Now what's Andrew Smalls question the referee?
The question of whether the ball was actually grounded went to the TMO. Joe Marler was certain he'd scored. Watching from the stands with everything crossed was Ugo Monye.
Joe Marler, and I loved the look of it because he went to a TMO and there's just a great shot just of him, just him looking over his shoulder at the big screen. And when it pops up with TRY, just a little wink to the lads, it was brilliant.
Over the road, but what a journey that will be. The table toppers are off to Twickenham.
Nick Evans kicked the decisive conversion 25-23 and Harlequins were in their first Premiership final. The fortnight before the final, things began to really heat up for Danny Kerr and co.
A couple of days later after the game, we all got to the airport, flew out to Abu Dhabi, had five like unbelievable days. We went out there, completely switched off, spent some time with each other, went on the beach, got on boats, had a couple of nights out, had some great dinners together.
It's the hottest place in the world to actually do rugby training. It was 38, 39, 40 degrees each day we were training and lads are dying on the pitch, going through obviously different touch games, doing our mauling, scrum, lineouts. Full rugby sessions in that heat and it was extremely hard work.
I remember vividly hiding behind the shadow of one of the floodlights alongside Ollie Cohn, who was at, I think he was at 20 stone at the time, and he was just like not able to function in that heat. But it was the same for me, and we were doing fitness, and even though Ollie and I were losing control of our bodily functions in one way or another, we were sort of laughing about it at the same time, looking at the ridiculousness of it, but also understanding the design, the method that we were going through in order to try and achieve. And I think that's the difference between being a good team and a great team, the willingness to look at a situation from a distance subjectively and go, right, we may be in the biggest hole we've ever been in, but we understand why we're here. And then we go back to the stoop a week later and it's hot. And Twickenham, being the cauldron it is, was even hotter. And it was almost like it couldn't have played out better for us that we'd been to Dubai, done some warm weather training and experienced what we had, the pain, but also the enjoyment we'd had at that time. It was almost meant to be by the time we came back to the stoop a week later.
Harlequins would walk across the road from their home at the stoop to the home of rugby and to one of the biggest games in their history. And Monye would be there.
To think I wouldn't play in Harlequin's first ever final was just not an option.
We said, well, we're leaving. You get yourself in shape, we'll pick you. He wasn't fit, but you weren't going to stop him. I tell you, he'd torn his hamstring. I don't know how he made it. I literally don't know. That was pure mind over matter. I thought there was a few people going to drop dead in front of me, but almost brought the team just closer and closer as we got. And then we arrived to Twickenham for the final. and the heat was white hot again. It was 27, 28 degrees. It was the perfect day. We decided to do the, I suppose, the famous walk, put out on the message board that we'd be making this walk across to the Stoop, met in the Stoop as we normally would for pre-match, and then walked across.
I remember walking from home to the Stoop and then the complete shock at the guard of honour we got walking across the bridge to Twickenham, where thousands upon thousands of fans were just there, smiling, beaming, waving flags.
Just lined by Harlequins supporters the whole way over, and it was, you still get goose pimples thinking about it. It was one of the great moments.
The weather, the heat, the noise and the colour just hit you in the face. I didn't realise you had so many fans. That was one of the best things about the day, and it really set the emotional tone for the day.
This is our day. This is made for us. This is perfect. The moment that will live with me forever is that walk. No other club can do what we can do. We can walk from our home to the second home, to the home of rugby, to Twickenham, to play in a final, and all our fans can come and wish us luck.
Waiting for them at the end of the walk were Leicester Tigers. By 2012, they were 9 times English champions and twice European champions. What a record! They'd beaten Quins just weeks earlier and had won 9 games in a row.
I was glad we got Leicester in the final. Not because we didn't rate them. Of course, we massively respected them and everything that they were about. But if you want to be champions and be true champions and be really proud of everything that you've achieved, then I think it's really important that you have the stiffest test, and we believe that they were the biggest challenge.
I mean, Leicester have been to 598 finals in a row, haven't they?
I felt as if Leicester Tigers were the ultimate premiership champions. Incredible team, history, coach. Had won it 9 times previously. The 8th consecutive final. It was the challenge of all challenges. They'd beaten us 4 weeks previously at home at the Stoop, scored over 40 points on us. And it's very rare you get opportunities to try and turn the tables.
Are you ready?
Well, the two best teams of the season meet on the final day of the season, how it should be.
If it was a cold, damp, rainy day, it might have been a different outcome on that day. But being hot with the atmosphere we had, it almost made us play at a level we hadn't played before. So we played at a pace that was hard to live with, particularly that first 20.
We just hit that game on fire.
For the majority of my career, I was petrified of making a mistake. On that day, it certainly changed.
This is Jordan Turner Hall. One of those bruising inside runs. Evans, flip back to Robson, who gets the ball away cleverly. Evans again involved. A moment of real promise. This one wins.
Tommy Williams flying in the corner in a play where we're just playing too quick for the team. I think we got a couple of offloads in, played quickly. Tommy scoots in for a try.
And that's the exact start we wanted. We wanted to come out and shock Leicester. I remember how happy we were with that start. We all ran over celebrating. It's Premiership final. Tom Williams has just scored in under 10 minutes against a team that were backing themselves to come and bully us.
Tom Williams' try made it 8-0 to Quins, but the Tigers, with all their big game experience, came back.
You're never going to keep a team like Leicester out of a game for long. They're too good, they're too experienced, especially the Leicester team of 2012. And unsurprisingly, after our fast start, they started to get a foothold in the game.
Backwards.
Oh, actually looking for Cohen.
Quins were 14-13 ahead at half-time. Amonya was calling on all his reserves to stay on for the second half.
Probably shouldn't have played the final. I had 30% strength in my left hamstring. I mean, it was pretty much held together with tape.
In the semi-final, if it was the semi-final, we went back 2 weeks, it would have been a case of going within our shells, and we did quite the opposite. We went back to doing what we did well because we'd learned from that experience. We've got to get back to playing our game and putting Leicester under pressure, and we kept doing that.
Quins had been 17 points ahead, leading 30-13 with 15 minutes to go, thanks to Chris Robshaw's try and Nick Evans' boot.
Oh, that's the try line. That's how close they are.
Chris Robshaw just like a hot knife through butter.
Looking, waiting, scoring!
But Leicester scored 10 unanswered points when Anthony Allen touched down and George Ford kicked the conversion on a penalty. The momentum was with the Tigers. A converted try would take the match to extra time. Danny Kerr remembers those decisive, nerve-wracking moments.
They had a scrum. I always remember left-hand side scrum for us defending, and I knew they were going to run at me. I think it was Billy Twelvetrees. I was like, he's going to run at me. He's going to run at the smallest guy. I was like, I'm going to have to just put my head down and just put in a good tackle here.
Twelvetrees, this is the moment. Oh, what a tackle that was.
He should have passed it. I don't know if Billy, if you watch this, mate, you've probably seen it a lot, but he should have given it out wide because I think they had an overlap, but he went straight for me, which is the sensible play in that moment. And I remember chopping him and a couple of lads got over the ball. I think Chris Robshaw got over the ball, got this turnover, and then the ref gave the penalty, and I remember the boys just went mad.
From turmoil on and off the pitch to Premiership title winners at Twickenham in just a few seasons, Harlequins, one of the world's oldest and most storied clubs, could finally call themselves champions of England.
For so long, English rugby's aristocrats, and now they have the crown.
How incredible it felt as a group to have achieved what we set out to achieve. We gave ourselves a goal to go and go after the Premiership that season, and we've managed to achieve it as a group in front of 80,000 fans over at Twickenham. Something that will live with me forever.
Elation and relief. Just to know, I think everyone deep down, to show that our way of rugby can win trophies.
Conor O'Shea lifted spirits. He allowed us to be free and expressive. And there was a real sense of unity within us.
I think it was just the whole excitement of the whole year, how hard it is to win a Premiership, all the tough times we'd had, all the things we'd gone through as a group. That moment, you could never, can't really put it into words of what it meant.
Our thing was like, why can't a Tech win championships and trophies? And I think for us to win that just gave us that extra shot of confidence of what we're doing is right. It was beautiful, it was beautiful.
I think it's the way we wanted to play. And because of that, we perhaps enjoyed it so much more. We enjoyed and appreciated everyone so much more for everything that we were hoping to become.
They worked hard, they played hard, they enjoyed each other, and they played with a smile on their face. That was pretty special.
Yeah, now I think back on it, and I haven't done much reflecting on that moment in the changing room. I'd say that's probably my most treasured memory of my time playing rugby.
Being with all the lads, spraying the champagne, Nick Easter with a cigar in his mouth that he tucked into his sock for the second half, which is just incredible. Yeah, just an unbelievable feeling.